Welcome to episode 16 of the Harry Potter Lexicon podcast. My name is Steve Vandrark, and I am the creator and editor-in-chief of the Harry Potter Lexicon website. And I'm very excited to come to you today, starting kind of a brand new series for the podcast. And this is a series which I really wanted to put these together because, quite honestly, this has been a crazy Harry Potter year so far, and it's only June. And so part of what's been so exciting and so much fun has been the Cursed Child play. Part of it is the Fantastic Beasts movie that's coming up. But personally, for me, one of the most exciting things about it is that we are, and I say we very intentionally, we are working on a brand new version of the Harry Potter Lexicon website. And in order to talk about that and to kind of tell a little bit more about it, I'd like to introduce my co-host for these podcasts, Mr. Nick Moline. Nick, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you, Steve?
I'm doing very, very well. This is exciting for me because it's summer, and summer is always my big, you know, work on the lexicon time. So why don't you tell who you are a little bit. People know me a little bit better because they've been listening to these podcasts, but who are you anyway? Who are you anyway?
Well, I'm a programmer by trade, so I work with computers and tech. But I like to say that I have always been kind of like if I become a fan of something, I'm a fan. So, you know, back in it was shortly before the release of five. So I would say, finally picked up a copy of the first Harry Potter book and went nuts and read through the four that were available at the time in, 2 days. And
good Lord, 2 days.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, those were a little shorter. Well, Goblet not, but yeah. Okay.
Oh, nowadays I can read 1 through 4 in 1 day.
All right, I know. But, mostly because we know them by heart, right?
Right. But, and then, of course, naturally, when I got that, it started joining the crowd of people waiting for book five. I started looking around to try and collect my thoughts, and I found your site, pretty quickly. And it's like, oh my God, here's everything that I could possibly want to know. And, I can organize my own thoughts and find the things that I was missing. So yeah, I've been a fan of, you and your site for many years.
Well, first time we met was at Azcatraz, right?
That's right.
In San Francisco, that convention. Yeah. And, at that point, I don't know. I know that you bought copies of the Lexicon at the convention, the book, which cracks me up because how many copies of that do you have now? I mean, besides the ones I've given you, I mean, you probably must have about 10 copies between you and your wife.
I believe. Let me see. Let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 7 copies. So we have 7 copies of Lexicon. Yeah. But I didn't buy them all because for some strange and unknown reason, there was just this overlap. Like, we went to go see you. We went to go to Azcatraz, and I was so excited. Well, first of all, I pre-ordered a copy before the, when it first was up for pre-order. Like, I think day one, I probably was one of the first pre-orders. And then, of course, waited forever for it to come out for reasons we shouldn't go into.
Gotcha.
But, and then when I went to Azcatraz, for some, I bought copies from you there and had you sign them, and of course got me and Barbara our own copies because we like to research stuff on our own. And then, and our roommate Mike got a copy too. And then as soon as I get back from Azcatraz and I get to the office, there's a copy of the book sitting on my desk signed by you from another conference you had gone to, that a friend of mine had gone to that conference, met you, got you to sign a book for me, and then brought it back and left it sitting on my desk while I was meeting you at another conference. So
that's pretty cool. Yeah. So anyway, so you and I kind of go back a long way here. We really do. Mm-hmm. And the thing is that we were not just fellow fans. I mean, we both get kind of that same level of total geekiness when it comes to Harry Potter facts and all that kind of stuff. But also, we right away, I mean, it wasn't long after that we started talking about revising the lexicon, and I seem to recall being rather resistant to the idea at the time.
So the way I remember it, the first thing that happened is at the time you had moved the lexicon to a shared hosting service, and we're having trouble with it being up. You know, everything was just dying on it all the time. And
right.
That's the current version of the Lexicon, the live version. Certain features of it just wouldn't load. Mm-hmm. And we had talked before, and you knew I was in tech, and you asked me if I could fix those problems. And the first thing I did is I helped you move it to a more powerful server, then I started fixing little bugs and stuff that were causing it to not work so well. And then I started talking to me, it's like, so what do you think about the idea of just going totally new? And then you kind of just looked at me aghast.
And there's a reason why I want to talk about this, and it's because we are doing this complete redesign of the Lexicon website. And it's not just because of a few bugs and wanting to run faster. I mean, there's some really deep down reasons. First of all, reasons why the Lexicon is the way it is.
Right.
Because, I don't know if somebody goes to that website now. A lot of fans nowadays are really not aware of what the internet looked like in 1999 when the Lexicon was first created.
It was glorious.
Well, yeah, okay.
I love 1.0.
Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah, there's a lot of GeoCities websites with music that played automatically and flashing text. But back then, the whole world was so different. Because back then, nobody was on a fast internet connection. Everybody was on dial-up. And for those of you that don't know what that is, go look it up. Everybody's on dial-up, so it's running slowly, which means that any website with any sort of graphics, anything like this, loaded very slowly. If you would go to CNN, the text would come up and the picture would be like almost, you would just see there was a picture there, but you couldn't see any detail. And it might take it 30 to 40 seconds for that picture to come in. And it would come in line by line. And, I mean, that was the way the internet worked. And so when I created the Lexicon way back then, one of my goals was that it would load super fast. And if you would turn the page or go to a new page, it would just load just like that, which meant that every page was handwritten HTML with the intention of no graphics. All of the graphicness to it was all done just with fonts or with, horizontal lines and all this kind of stuff. And, that was the way the Lexicon was designed. And in some ways, even though it has, changed over the years, that is still the core of it, is that, 1999 era website. And that's really the reason we needed to change it, partly because of the coding. But, you know more about websites than I do. So, talk to me a little bit about what a website should be and what it used to be, I guess.
So, I remember making websites in the 90s. I had a GeoCities site, and then I had a server that I was running little things on. And, you had to make them small. First of all, the technologies to make them dynamic didn't even exist yet.
Right.
And so you really had no choice to have, basically a database-driven website where everything is actually controlled and, CMSs and stuff like that. But
CMS on top of... CMS meaning content management system.
Yes, thank you.
There was no such thing as a content management system in 1999. Content management system was my brain as I tried to remember what I put on what other page.
Right, and an old copy of Dreamweaver.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that if being that, and I'm just clarifying, that means that if we found out Snape was 35 years old, I had to go to every page that might mention that in the entire Lexicon by hand from my memory and change it on that page.
Yes.
There was no way to just change it in the database saying, hey, Snape's 35, and it would automatically update. That just simply did not exist as an option. So go on.
Right. So... there's this thing that they called Web 2.0 where, there was a shift to dynamically generated websites with, lots of animation, lots of JavaScript, and in the back end, a content management system where, you would make a template, and then the content management system would put the stuff into the template, and that, allowed you to do things like have multiple people working on it and stuff like that.
So that if a user calls up a page about Snape, that doesn't exist like a Word document, like a fixed page, but it exists as a bunch of, almost like a bunch of frames, a bunch of holes, and those holes are the same for every page, and when you call up the one about Snape, it puts the Snape information in those holes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's basically the way the websites are created today. Now, you have to be careful with that because speed still matters, you know. It's still, there's still a lot of people with slow connections, believe it or not. There's a statistic that, over 65% of all Google searches are done on phones, on a mobile connection, not on on Wi-Fi.
That makes sense.
Right. I mean, that's more than half. More than half of the web traffic when people are looking for something is done on a slow connection. So you still have to worry about that.
So that what you're saying then is that a search on a mobile device is actually a slow connection?
Typically speaking, yes. I mean, we're a little bit spoiled with, LTE here in the United States.
True.
But there's a lot of people who, they're lucky if they have 3G. They might have Edge. If you remember Edge from, the first iPhone or, worse than that.
I don't use Apple products, but okay.
I know that you don't use Apple products. But, back then it was the only real smartphone, so.
Moving on. Let's not get into a smartphone discussion, all right?
I don't use iPhone now either.
No, I happen to know you're an Android person, but let's go. Let's keep going here.
Right. So in all these, especially in other countries, these connect, or in rural areas of even the United States, some people's entire internet experience is a slow connection. So a lot of the things that you did back in the 90s are still important today, trying to keep things small, don't use images, you don't have to, etc. But you have to actually, but at the same time, you want to put as much information on there and be able to update it quickly, so a CMS system is almost necessary to make a large-scale website these days.
Especially one like the Lexicon, which is taking a huge number of facts, and I know they're fantasy facts, but facts, and trying to organize them. I mean, it's a lot of information we're trying to deal with here.
It is. I mean, we've been working on the, I've been working on the infrastructure for the new Lexicon for a few years now, but even just over the last, 2 years, there's been a, nice large team of people just working on the data. There's so much data to fill in there.
Right. Well, let's step back. We'll get to the data. Step back and tell, though, what is the vision now for this new Lexicon? Because I would love to say that this is all my vision, but it really isn't. This is really where you have come in with your understanding and knowledge, which is vastly more than mine, and really been able to make this come to life. So go ahead, talk a little bit about what we're trying to do here and what it's looking like, and go on.
Okay. Well, so my first thought was, we've got to come up with a way, not just a CMS system, but a real granular data system where you're not entering in just a block of text, even in one of those holes that you contact before, but right down to an individual detail, what is Snape's birthday, month, day, year, so that, you don't have to echo out that he's 35. We can calculate that on the fly, and actually tell it, and so that as years go on, we don't have to go up there and say, okay, now he's 30, right?
Gotcha,
and having those type of pieces of information just down at such a small level that we actually can do more interesting, intricate things with it. One thing that I'm really excited about is we've been putting it, with the characters in particular, you go in there and as you're editing a character, you just say, okay, this was his parent. We know this is his mother. This is his father. This is his brother. But, that other person was his mother. Then I could say, okay, well, this is that person's mother, that person's father. And we could create whole family trees and things like that. So a lot of that's not quite ready yet, but in a way it kind of is.
But what you're saying is that I could have done that back in 1999, but I would have had to basically craft it by hand. I would have had to draw little squares and put little names in them. And what you're saying is that we can now use this system to actually generate these things based on the data.
Right, and even create relationships that might not have even thought of, right? Mm-hmm. Like, once you know who everybody's parent is, you can start to see how people are related, even especially, now that we've got things like the Cursed Child set 19 years later, and, with Fantastic Beasts set, 60 years before,
Sure.
You know, we're going to start getting details that of a longer spans of time that, you know, these families might start connecting in ways that we might not have even noticed as unless you actually had something like this.
Sure. And that's, you know, that brings up an interesting point. And I don't want to stop talking about the lexicon itself, but the whole thing about Cursed Child and Fantastic Beasts and all that. And I said that at the beginning. There's this year is just kind of Harry Potter crazy.
Yeah.
And I want to go back to talking about the lexicon, but I think I also, at some point, we need to talk about things like Cursed Child, Fantastic Beasts, and how that all fits into everything. But I'm sorry, we were talking about the lexicon. So this website is now going to be a dynamic, mobile-friendly, right?
Yes, that was one thing that was very important with this, is we wanted to, you know, like I said, 65% of all visitors visit the internet on a phone, so
the website
should look just as good on a phone.
Very bad on a phone.
Yes, it was.
Almost unusable, yeah.
Right. But it was designed for a computer. Well, no, we didn't even, I mean, you didn't even think about making websites for phones back then because it was impossible.
Right. Yeah, I can remember when the very first sort of browsers came out for phones, and they were a joke. Actually, I think they were coming out for the Palm Pilot and their ilk back then. But okay, so let's look at the new lexicon, it is in beta right now, and maybe some of you listening have already visited it. So what's the plan? I know what my plan is. I want to hear what your plan is, since a lot of this is on you.
Well, my plan is to finish the back-end coding, the stuff that, you know, makes the site somewhat unusable, as quickly as possible, because I think, you know, when the embargo on data on spoilers from Cursed Child comes out, we want to have this new version live to be plugging in new data.
Right. Okay, so we're thinking end of June, beginning, middle of July, right in that area that we should be able to go live?
Exactly, yeah, that's okay. The plan.
Now we've broadcast it. Now we got to do it.
Uh-oh.
So we've been in betas for about 6 months. And
right.
I mean, and I remember 6 months ago I was thinking, well, why don't we just go live? And now if I look at it now compared to what it was 6 months ago, I'm thinking, thank God we waited.
Exactly.
Because, you know, we've just really, it's evolved so much. Some of it from, we've had some excellent feedback from users. Some beta feedback. But also just as we get more and more data in and we see how the data looks in the pages and how they all connect, it's going to be a better website for the beta period. But yeah, it's about time that we went live on this thing. But I know Nick and I both have lists of things that we have to do before it can go live. But
most have a very long list.
Most of the longest list is yours. I know that. But let's talk about that's enough techie stuff. Let's talk about Cursed Child and Fantastic Beasts and all this crazy stuff. So it's only really recently that I've come to the realization, and maybe some fans out there are going to be saying, "Well, duh, it's about time you caught on." The realization of just how much the world of Harry Potter is changing and has changed. Now,
It's a very different universe now.
I think what really hit me was when I saw that round logo. I forget where it was. Was it on Cursed Child, maybe? Where it was that round logo that said J.K. Rowling's Wizarding World?
It's actually on everything. Like, you can see it's on the bottom of Pottermore, of every page of Pottermore. It's on the advertisement, the documents for Cursed Child. It was actually in one of the trailers for Fantastic Beast. Actually, has that little logo right there on the corner.
So I think it's clearly this is the new identity of what we always think of as the Harry Potter universe.
Yes, it's really not the Harry Potter universe anymore as much as it is the universe of magic that happens to include Harry Potter.
That's right. And I don't know. And I guess I need to just come to terms with that. But it's hard because, you know, I've been doing this since 1998. This is when I first read a Harry Potter book. And it's really, really hard to because canon for me was the books.
Yes.
You know, and I mean, it was so easy because that's all there was. And then once in a while there would be an interview and she'd throw in some extra detail and that we added that to our lexicon of what the lexicon was, you know, whatever J.K. Rowling was saying was the Harry Potter universe. And it was so easy back then. And now it's getting harder.
Yeah, but in a way, I mean, in a way, I actually kind of like it. You know, I can tell you, I love the Harry Potter novels, and, you know, Harry as a character is obviously, you know, near and dear to my heart. But I gotta tell you, I have always wondered more about other characters. And, you know, the Harry Potter books were so focused on what was happening to Harry that the stuff that's in the outside world just didn't apply.
Sure.
And, you know, we would get little bits, little nuggets of information about what the rest of the wizarding world had. But I've always wondered, you know, when they first announced a J.K. Rowling written story of Newt Scamander and his adventures as a young man, I'm like, well, of course I want to know this. I read that Fantastic Beasts Little School book that was sent out. I want to know what made him do this book, you know?
Right.
So,
well, and you know, that's I hear what you're saying, and that's true, because I mean, I remember is 2000 and then 2001, which was after Goblet of Fire, which is when like all of the video games started, and Rowling was creating canon information that was not in the books, but she was creating it. Things like the famous wizard card list and all these things that she made for the video games. She was creating all this additional stuff. Which, again, gladly, we took that in and included that because, great, she made it. We'll include it. The trick, of course, was the fact that the minute you do that, the minute you can say, okay, I'm going to be, the books are canon. But the minute you open that up and say, the books and this, or the books and that, okay, the books and what she said in the interviews, and then the books and the interviews and the famous wizard cards. And the minute you do that, you start making your line someplace. And
right.
that's the difficult part, because the lexicon has always tried to be what Rowling says, you know. And I don't care if she said it in a book or if she said it in an interview, but it's just what she said. You might say the Harry Potter lexicon is the J.K. Rowling's version of Harry Potter lexicon.
Right.
You know. Which you know, we can have arguments about whether that's fair or not, but you know, that's just what the lexicon is. But now, yeah. What do we do with Cursed Child? She didn't write it.
Cursed Child has got me real confused, and Fantastic Beasts has got me real confused. I'm like, well, what do I do about this stuff? Because I know that she wrote the stories, or that she came up with the story concepts of these things.
But well, she wrote the screenplay for Fantastic Beasts, but how much of her actual written screenplay, how much of those words are what is in the final shooting script?
It's hard to say. And even if it is in the shooting script, you know, movies are edited considerably after they finish being shot, you know, and that's all up to the director. I find it, you know, hard to think just how much, you know, these things are. And if you think about it from a practical point of view, she wrote the stories for the Harry Potter movies. She wrote the books. They used the books as the basis for these movies and then wrote a screenplay from that. So she wrote the story and then they changed it. And it's a different story when it's on the screen.
That's true.
Right?
But then think about this. Okay, so she wrote the screenplay for Fantastic Beasts. How much of what you see on the screen is described in the screenplay and therefore from her? How much of it is created by the art department? For example, the swooping evil thing, which we've seen was in the trailer, this greenish bat-like thing that flies around.
Right.
Well, I'm sure she came up with the swooping evil because she wrote the script. I'm sure she did. That's great. How much of the description of what it actually looks like comes from her, and how much of it is the art department saying, oh, cool, let's see, we can make it look like this. All of a sudden it's not hers anymore. It's like fan art.
Right. And like, you know, some of the things we had this conversation before is, you know, some of these characters who are in this movie, for example, you know, she hasn't really described. We don't really have any description of Newt Scamander, for example.
Right.
You know, we know he was a mesozoologist. That's, we know he traveled the world. And we know he has a grandson named Rolf. But we don't know what, for example, what he looks like. So some people would say, well, since this is a movie and that she wrote the screenplay for the movie, then now we've got to say that Newt's Commander looks like Eddie Redmayne. I have a problem with that because you know, Eddie Redmayne's just an actor, right?
Right, and I don't think Hermione looks like Emma Watson either. I mean,
exactly.
And that's clearly not the case.
Hermione does not look like Emma Watson.
No. 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 As a matter of fact, not only does she not look like Emma Watson because there are other ways to show her, as we see with Cursed Child, but also the description of Hermione in the books doesn't fit with Emma Watson. Emma Watson doesn't look like that character.
Yeah, they tried in the first two movies, and then they just gave up.
Yeah, she got. Yeah, and that's fine. I mean, I think where some people think that everything has to agree, and that's where I find this discussion runs into some problem, is because just because it's canon doesn't mean it has to be consistent.
No.
Canon just means she wrote it. It doesn't mean it's all consistent. I mean, even the books, within the books themselves, it isn't consistent. You know? But you could look at, for example, if you're looking at one of the books, let's say Half-Blood Prince, okay?
Mm-hmm.
She has an original version of Half-Blood Prince, which then was edited by a team from Scholastic and a team from Bloomsbury.
Right.
Okay, it changed with the editing.
Absolutely.
We don't know how much.
And the two editions are different from each other, the Bloomsbury edition.
But the point is that they were all. It isn't like Bloomsbury did theirs first and therefore it's better, because they did them simultaneously.
Right.
But none of them are her original writing.
Right.
I mean, well, they are, but I mean, they're edited versions of her original writing from other people. Just like a movie is an edited version of Fantastic Beasts from her writing, an edited version of it. And I'm saying her writing with Fantastic Beasts because she actually wrote the screenplay. So I'm not talking about the other movies, because those she didn't even write the screenplay of. But the screenplay of Fantastic Beasts then was, if you will, edited by editors to do the movie. There's a little bit more parallel between that and the editors who work on her novels to give us the final version of the novels. So in some ways, the final version of the novels also are not her original writing.
Very true.
And so
we know of at least one circumstance where an editor made a significant change that was clearly wrong, right?
Yeah,
and had to be corrected.
We have an editor who made a significant error by including something that wasn't supposed to be included.
Yeah.
which raised a whole lot of questions right after Half-Blood Prince came out, because my British friends were saying, really? Does it say that? It really says that in that book? And I'm looking at it going, yeah, it says it right there.
Right.
And that was a huge, huge ta-da after Half-Blood Prince came out. So,
or Goblet of Fire when...
The famous wand order problem.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, where she had written it correctly, and the editor thought that it was incorrect and switched it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that was, in essence, rewriting the rules of magic when they did that.
Right, and so that just goes to show is that, you know, deciding what exactly is, quote-unquote, canon, if you're going to be really persnickety about what canon is, you still can't really be sure. I mean, what version of the books are you going to say is right? Some people would say, well, the Bloomsbury versions are the most correct. Well, that may be true in the case of the first couple of books, because they were written and edited well in advance of the Scholastic versions, which were kind of done afterwards by Scholastic people. But that's not true. Once we got into book, five and six and seven, they were editing together at the same time. I mean, this was a group project. And so none of them have priority in terms of which one is quote-unquote better. You can say, well, this one is because it uses British spellings or British phrases, and I guess you could argue that the British phrases maybe are more correct. But, I guess that really, and we could go on, and I know we're not the only ones who talk about this and discuss it. But the fact of the matter is, for the sake of the lexicon website, basically what we try to do is we try to stick with as best we can with what Rowling herself has written or has said specifically about facts about her world. And we're not saying we're better than everybody else or we're right, you're wrong. We're just saying that's what the lexicon is about. And if you want to look at, if you want to see the names of characters who appeared on a prop, and you want to consider that to be the canon that you accept. You're not going to find it on the lexicon, but there are places you can certainly go and find that stuff. So,
right.
Anyway, well, man,
things like what position did James play?
Right. Exactly. Which, well, there's really, yeah, there's, well, Chaser, because she said so.
Right. But not if you watch the movies.
Okay, well, we're not going to, yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah.
That's one of many, many things in the movies, but.
Right.
So I didn't really think we were going to talk about canon for all that time, because I was thinking we would talk about spoilers. Really?
Yeah, I thought so too.
Because that's a big deal right now, rolling with her Keep the Secrets campaign for Cursed Child. And, you know, that's really an interesting question, the whole question of spoilers.
It is.
Yeah, go on.
Because, you know, I'm kind of like, you know, and this, I'm, obviously this works in any fandom, right? I mean, you know, if you're a fan of something where the canon is something that's on screen or movie, something like that, where the television's the canonical version of something, you know, getting spoiled because something is put up early or something like that has been things that people argued about whether that is right or wrong for years. Some people get really upset when they're spoiled.
Right.
Other people, they go looking for the spoilers. You know?
Sure. Well, I would have been very, very upset if I had been spoiled for any of the Harry Potter novels.
Absolutely.
Because I wanted to read them fresh.
You hear about the, you know, unfortunately, that wasn't my circumstance, but, you know, you hear people, when Half-Blood Prince comes out, running around outside, you know, as the people are in line, shouting, you know, Snape kills Dumbledore. And
right.
Then,
yeah, that would be horrible. And I agree with that. But the problem with Cursed Child is... problem, if you will. Spoiled for what? I don't know how I will ever see that film, that play.
Oh, I mean, someday I'm going to see that.
Sure. Well, yeah, when it finally does, you know, tour, what, 2 years from now? I'm not going to wait 2 years.
No.
So, I mean, what's spoiled how? Reading the screenplay? That's not the same as a novel. She didn't even write it. It's basically, it's a story. You know, I want to experience the play. Obviously, I'd like to experience the play. I wish that I could go tonight and see it and experience it the way that she would want it to be experienced, have no idea what was coming, be totally surprised. That would be great. It's also not realistic. It's not going to happen.
Unfortunately, no.
No. So, I mean, that's where I struggle with the idea of spoilers. I'm not going to put anything on the lexicon about... you know, what's in Cursed Child. But at what point do we put... I mean, if there's a new character, for example, in there... Okay, here's a classic example. Exactly what I mean. The program for Cursed Child was... images of it were available online. So I'm looking at this, and it includes the names of some characters that I've never heard of.
Right.
Doesn't say anything about them.
No.
So... at what point can I make an entry in the new lexicon for one of those characters? Even if I don't know any facts about it, I could write, this is the name of the character, it comes from Cursed Child. Is that a spoiler?
Well, yeah, I don't know. First, although, one thing you could do is write them up, put them as drafts, and set them to with scheduled posting to go live on the 31st of July.
Okay, number one. I don't know how to do that. Number two, I'm sure you'll show me. But number two, 31st of July is kind of the key here.
Right.
Because that's when the book is coming out. And obviously, I will be grabbing a copy. I don't know if there will be a midnight party. But is there going to be midnight parties for it? That'd be so cool. We haven't had those in ages.
I have heard midnight parties. I know people are doing them.
Oh, golly. I got to look around.
We should do one.
Well, we should. We could do an online one. But no, we can't be getting the book. Oh, we could do it. We could do Hangouts on our phone as we're at the store. You're in, you know, California, and I'm in Texas.
Right.
Hey, Nick, did you get the book yet? Oh, cool. Okay.
We could do. We got the Kindle edition, so we'll just wait here we'll have a live podcast, and then we'll be refreshing on our Kindles until they pop up. And then it's like, okay, see you. Hanging up now.
Okay, so. 31st, that's July 31, that's going to be when everybody can read it. But see, even so, just as an example, when Deathly Hallows came out,
Right.
We waited a respectable amount of time, I'd say about a month or two, before we started putting up much information about Deathly Hallows, like in any details. When we put up some stuff, we put up characters and things like this. But for one thing, it took us forever when the old lexicon even to get all these pages done. So it wasn't like we, you know, could get them all done in 2 days. But even so, it was a while before we were putting anything on the lexicon, which was a spoiler. As in, like, plot points. Not characters and so, but, you know, main plot points. We had plenty to work on because there were so many other things to add and new characters and spells and so. And so we just kind of put off for a while, I'd guess a month or two maybe, before we started putting anything on there that was really had a lot of spoilerishness to it. So is that what we're supposed to do for Cursed Child? We wait to, you know, 2 months before we put any of these new characters on there? I don't know the answer to that. I'm asking a rhetorical question.
If you were asking my opinion, I would say no for two reasons, or three reasons, right? Reason number one, the reason that you won't do that is because it takes most people a long time to read a book, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We just said earlier in the podcast, you know, for me, it's 2 days to read 4 books. For other people, it's, you know, a week or 2 weeks to read a small, regular book. Not sure. Because they're not fast readers, but it's because they just don't take the time to do it that way, you know, in one
sitting.
Or they
intentionally read them slowly, which I tried to make myself do, and I can't. I read it slowly the third time.
Me neither. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I find every time I read them, faster.
Mm-hmm. So that was reason number one.
So, I mean, I was going to say, you know, part of the reason you waited for longest for that, but this, since it's being released as a play, there are people who get the story of the play in a matter of a few hours.
Right.
And it's not a matter of how fast they can read, it's how mm-hmm. fast they can watch it.
Sure.
So, for the people who are, you know, seeing it the way it's meant to be seen.
Uh-huh.
You know, they're not going to take months to digest it.
That's true.
Two, a lot of people are spoiling it now. I couldn't stop myself from reading some things, and I read one that I hope isn't true. I hope that's not what the plot is. I hope somebody just tried to mess, you know, they're messing with me. But we'll see. or if it is the plot, I hope, you know, I'm pleasantly surprised at how well they do it. But, you know, people are being spoiled now. From that perspective, I don't personally see there's much reason to wait too much further after the book is released.
Uh-huh.
And then the third reason on a similar vein is, you know, the internet's a different beast now, as you said. I mean, the internet in the 90s and early 2000s, you know, the internet was a repository of knowledge, but it was kind of a repository of old knowledge, in a manner of speaking. Even if you were updating it and putting stuff up there live, you were putting it out there for the sake of an archive, right?
Mm. Yeah, that's true.
And people read it that way. Nowadays, I mean, for most people, the way they experience the internet is social media.
Okay, that's true. That's a really good point.
And the social media lifestyle world is now instant gratification, little nuggets of details, just what you need right now, right this second, and then you move on to something completely different. You know, ooh, cat video. And, all people on the who are on the internet are dug from up. Squirrel!
Oh. Yeah, okay. So I haven't seen Up, so don't spoil me.
Oh, I know that. I don't think that spoils it. It's in the trailer. So.
Well, yeah, and I do know what you're talking about, but I'm just kind of making a joke on the whole spoiler stuff. How many years has that movie been out? But anyway.
Yeah, it's a long time.
Okay.
So
I see what you're saying. And in a sense, if you're coming to the lexicon, to some extent nowadays, if you come to the lexicon, you would expect to see that stuff there.
You expect.
Right. That's what the lexicon is.
Exactly. You know, and if you think about it, for a lot of people, yeah, some people are researching things just for the sake of doing it. But realistically, the information that's already out, people who care have probably already researched. If they're researching now, it's because they want to research what's new.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So I kind of think that, you know, a lot of people, they're going to go grab their copy of the screenplay, read it, and then go want to pull up an article on Harry's, you know, that's an article on Harry his whole life, including mm-hmm. the events inside Cursed
sure.
Child.
Okay.
But, you know, they want something that's already complete.
Sure.
And I'm not saying we're going to be able to give that to them right the second that they
no.
want it, but I think we should be able to do it as quickly as we can.
Okay. Well, that's a really good way to look at it, because quite honestly, I mean, I've already had a couple of my editors, and just as a side note, we have about 30 editors from all over the world working on the data and for the new lexicon. So it's really has been an incredible experience working with this many really dedicated fans who really are just excited about, you know, the lexicon. They're excited about the information and facts and all that kind of stuff. It's an amazing bunch of people. And whereas the lexicon used to be like four people, and,
right.
You know, now it's just really expanded to become a fan project, which I think is just awesome. I've already had some of them asking, so can we post this? Can we post that? You know, I mean, when do we do this? And so at some point I'm going to have to pull the trigger and say, okay, yep, go ahead, post whatever you're going to post, because they're creating entries, they're adding information to entries, and, you know, I expect them to do their job. I don't babysit them or, you know, micromanage them, because they all know what they're doing, and they're all good, knowledgeable, you know, well-informed, amazing people, awesome editors, and they've got their jobs to do, and they do follow, you know, their guidelines and things, but, you know, they're just not quite sure. They just want to know, well, can we post this? And so basically I have said, we're going to keep the secrets. We're not going to reveal anything. We're not going to reveal any plot points. We're not going to put anything up at all about Cursed Child. And I think July 31, I'll just say, okay, gloves are off, go for it. And I know we'll all be reading it and being very excited about it. So
I know I
okay.
will.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, okay. Well, I'm tell you what I'm going to do. You and I were talking about what we're going to talk about, and we've already used up a lot of our time. But I do want to toss this out, because one thing that we want to do is we want to talk a little bit about canon, some canon details. Because you and I, for the last years now since Azkatraz, we have just had so much fun getting in these conversations about. You know, often it'll be after one of my podcasts, and then you say, okay, listen to your podcast, and then we'll start talking. And
yeah.
We'll talk and talk and talk and talk and talk, which is one of the reasons why I was so excited to get you on here, because rather than talk after the fact, let's talk during the fact. Let's talk during the podcast. So one of the things that, and that, this is just my idea, but here's what I'm going to say. I'm on sites online with a lot of fans, and it has really dawned on me that a lot of fans are new, and it seems self-evident. But what I'm saying is that I will hear questions and I will see comments, and it becomes obvious to me, whoa, that got answered ages ago. Well, how do they not know this? And then I realize they don't know this because they don't know what J.K. Rowling said, you know, 10 years ago in an interview. They're not going to know this stuff. Whereas to me, it seems obvious because, you know, I've been archiving these things for, you know, 17 years now.
Right.
But, and so I just want to talk about some of these things because, and not in a, you know, how come you people don't know this stuff kind of way, but just in a, hey, here's some cool information. You might hear this question on the internet. Here's the answer, because
mm-hmm.
Rowling did answer it. And you were just saying to me today when we were talking that you're listening to Prisoner of Azkaban in the car on the drive.
Yes,
so
I am.
Let's talk about the Marauder's Map.
I love the Marauder's Map.
I do, too. But let's talk about it, because a couple things. This is stuff you see online. One of the questions I see online is, how do Fred and George know how to operate it?
Right. That's a very common question. And, of course, I remember wondering the answer to that question for a long time until she answered it.
Okay, but before she answered it, what would you have thought? And it's not fair because I know you've read her, what she said, what Rowling said. But I'm just curious. What would you have thought?
You know, I always thought that somehow they found somebody who knew what it was. And,
okay.
You know, that was kind of my weird thing. I did kind of think that maybe it was the map itself, because there's that scene, you know, in the book where, you know, Snape is trying to get the map to reveal itself, and the map comes out and starts insulting him. So,
really delightful scene. Just saying.
Fantastic scene. Uh-huh. It's you know, people underestimate just how great her writing was even mm-hmm. that far back. Just some mm-hmm. of those things. I just even today re-listening to them, I just can't mm-hmm. help but laugh.
Yeah, and that phrase that Lupin suddenly got a rather closed look on his face. I mean, what a great line, because it's exactly right. That sort of, how do you describe that look on someone's face of like, oh my gosh, I don't dare say anything. What a great phrase. But see, here's what struck me, and this is before I read her answer. We keep thinking like Muggles.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's a map, we think of a map, a piece of paper.
Right.
But in the Wizarding world, it has a personality, or it has some amount of awareness and sentience and understanding. I mean, you say, well, how did they know that you have to say, I solemnly swear that I'm up to no good? Well, how do you know that that's exactly what the Marauders said? Maybe the map just realized, sensed who it was that this is kindred spirit, and whatever it is that they came up with, it kind of said, oh, that'll work. Sure, you're good. And from then on, that worked.
That's kind of what I was getting at there. I mean, the map will talk to somebody, says Snape to, I'm surprised he became a teacher. I can't remember the exact wording, mm-hmm. but,
right.
You know, it's, the map is in a way somewhat sentient. I mean, Harry even remembers something that Mr. Weasley had told him about, don't trust something that can think for itself if you don't know where it keeps its brain.
Right.
But the map clearly can think for itself.
Uh-huh.
You know, the Marauders put, you know, much like people put a little bit of their personality into the paintings.
Right. Yeah.
Same the Marauders thing. Put a little bit of their, you know, what, mm-hmm. probably 17, 18-year-old selves mm-hmm. into...
Hence the way it talked to Snape.
Right, into the Marauders' map. And... So, I could totally see these as mischievous. Thank you.
Yeah. Okay.
troublemakers, you know, just going out and saying, all right, you know, I could just totally, like, you know, when she answered the question, it's like, it seemed like her words were, don't you think it would be quite a Fred and George's thing to say in jest, and then this thing transform?
Right. But think about it. If we, again, think like Muggles... That map
sounds like a password.
Yeah. Like, okay, it would have to be this exact phrase.
But the way I think of it is that map's going to turn around and say, oh, that's good. Okay, I'll show myself to these uh-huh. guys. That's funny.
Right, exactly. And so I'm going to read what Rowling actually said.
Okay.
She says, the question was, how did they figure out how to work the map? She says, don't you? Well, this is how I explained it to myself at the time. And this does sound glib. Don't you think it would be quite a Fred and George's thing to say in jest and then see this thing transform? Can't you just see them? And then the interviewer said, but the exact word combination? Is that just a lot of luck or Felix Felicis? And then she says, or the map helped. And then the interviewer says, yeah, you can just see them sort of answering and joking with each other. And Rowling says, and the map flickering into life here and there when they got closer and closer. And finally, they hit upon the exact right word combination, and it just erupts. See, that sort of back and forth, that's perfect.
Right.
You know, because it's a magical object. It is, and it's not sentient in the completely sentient sense, but it has that awareness, kind of like a painting, like you said.
Yeah.
You know.
And in a way, the map wanted these guys to get it right.
Right. And I think there's more of that. I mean, think about the way that a Horcrux wants a person to do something.
Right.
And it's a Horcrux. It's a magical item. And granted, there's a bit of a soul in there. But it has this sort of forcing things to happen. I always say, you know, how come Harry stripped all his clothes off, jumped in a frozen lake after the sword, and didn't bother to take off the Horcrux? You'd think he would have noticed if he took everything else off, that he still had this around his neck. But I think the Horcrux kind of made him overlook it, if you will.
Exactly.
Because the Horcrux wanted to fight against him getting that
sword.
Wanted
to drag him underwater.
Right.
Yeah.
And so there's that sense of magical items having a certain amount of awareness in and of themselves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I just love that idea that, you know, and Lupin even kind of says something to that effect. You know, he says that the makers of this map would have wanted to lure you out of the castle. They would have found it quite funny.
Right. Yeah.
And then when at the end of the book, after Harry, you know, learns who the makers of the map were, and he asks Lupin about it, and he says, well, we would have found it quite funny. We'd have been disappointed if James's son did go out there and learn about the secret passages.
Uh-huh.
You know, so if that was their things and they had put a little bit of their own personality into the map,
uh-huh.
the map would have wanted Harry to use it.
Right.
I bet the map would have worked for Harry if he just said, "Map, please."
Yeah, you know, and in the same way that how do you think, and this bothered me when I first read it, how do you think that Ron got into the Chamber of Secrets? I'm sorry, Parseltongue is not something you can just and it works. It's an actual magical language. But
right.
I think, again, the circumstances are such that the magicalness, if you will, of the opening at that point reacted to his intention, his desire, his need in that moment and opened up. You know,
there was a great essay on the lexicon a long time ago about intention of magic. Do you remember that essay?
Yeah, I think I wrote it.
Yeah, and it was one of the things I love. You know, in Prisoner of Azkaban, the book that I'm listening to, you know, there's a scene. You know, there's two scenes where they need to where somebody needs to move something.
Uh huh.
You know, they need to move a tree, and then they need to move a body.
Uh-huh.
And the first time, you know, Hermione says mobile arbis, and then later, I think it's Lupin who says mobile corpus,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, those spells, if you look at their etymology, they sound exactly what they are. Mobile, mm-hmm. move, mm-hmm. arbis, tree.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I believe, you know, if it was you who wrote the essay, it was a great essay.
Was.
You know,
it was
you made this comment that, well, Hermione, being a very precise person, you know, would have learned tree and things. You can't imagine that they're, you know, reading the Thunder Book of Spells. There's a thing that says, to move a tree, say mobile arbis.
How often do you need that?
Exactly.
Well, if you're Hagrid, dragon in Christmas trees. But yeah, okay.
Right.
Uh-huh.
You know, it's not exactly something you need in day-to-day wizarding magic. You know, meanwhile, back in book one, you know, Wingardium Leviosa literally means move the feather,
mm-hmm.
and or levitate the feather, mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. make mm-hmm. the feather float.
Right, because the word wing is in there.
Yeah.
Right, which is not Latin, because there's no W in Latin. So.
Right. But Ron uses it
to move a club.
To move a club, which, mm-hmm. you know, Wingardium... You know, like I said, it's wing, the feather, mm-hmm. and why does it move the club? And it's like, well, because
that's what he wanted to move.
Exactly. That's what Ron wanted to move. Yeah. It doesn't so much matter what the words that are being spoken are,
mm-hmm.
as much as it matters what your intention is.
Right. And so it's a combination of that. It's the power of the caster. It's the wand. It's all of these factors come in together to actually make... It's not just like, see, we're thinking muggles again. You know, you screw this thing onto this, and it's screwed in, and then it's done.
Yeah.
We think, you know, and in magic, it's this much more malleable, much more nebulous combination of all these factors that make these things happen. So, okay. Last question, quickly.
All right.
So, how come Fred and George didn't notice that their brother was sleeping with some guy named Peter every night?
Well, my thinking with that back in the day was always just simply like, just how much are they looking for their brother on the map?
Right.
Especially at night.
Mm-hmm.
Like, is that something that they do? I'm like, oh, you know what? I better check on my brother and make sure he's in his dormitory.
And that's, who's Peter Pettigrew, not, you know?
Yeah. That's not a Fred and George thing to do. It's like, no, we're going for the... Secret passageway number 3 today. Let's
right.
go.
And see, yeah. Reading the book, if you read it closely, I think it's very clear that you only see what you're really trying to see.
Right.
And again, we have muggle ideas. Even when you see the film and you see the film version of the Marauder's Map, it's very clearly, it looks like a piece of paper. with little moving things on it. But if you think about what the map would really have looked like, just the sheer immense scope of the castle, it's not flat like the map is. It's the one that's the prop, you know? I mean, it's so three-dimensional that I almost imagine that the Marauder's map is like a hologram.
Mm-hmm.
And as you look, your focus in that hologram moves from one place to another. And like you said, why would they have been looking at Gryffindor Tower?
Yeah, that's not what they care about.
The only person who I can think of who wanted to look at Gryffindor Tower was Harry as he was gazing at Ginny, which is a little weird, but okay. This is a little creepy. But
I just find it amazing that the map works when you're far from Hogwarts.
Oh, yeah, I never thought about that.
Yeah.
But the point being that there's no particular reason why they would... And think about the scale, too. You're not going to see the detail of every room and where every single person is. Think about it, not just the little dots and the names next to the dots. It would be like this total, utter mass of names and dots. It would be completely impossible. If you're trying to look at Gryffindor Tower, you've got how many, like 7 different levels plus the common room?
Right.
I mean, that's just in one tower. Think about the size of this thing. There are no castles that big. I mean, Hogwarts is unbelievably huge. And maybe on the outside it isn't, but on the inside it is. You know, with the magically, I guess. But I mean, it's.
I never even considered that.
I mean, if you think about the fact that
I never thought that the castle might be bigger on the inside. I don't know why I didn't. Everything else is.
and it would almost have to be because the castle, the size of what is described, is 7 stories, plus at least another 7 for the tallest tower. Well, that wouldn't be the tallest tower. That would be Gryffindor Tower.
Right.
14 stories tall.
Plus dungeons
underneath. I mean, no castle in existence has ever been 14 stories tall. They just aren't. Castles are not that big.
The amount of manpower needed to build a castle of that size would have been...
And it's just, it would be totally out of proportion to what a castle is supposed to be. Well, to say nothing of the fact that castles didn't exist in 960 when Hogwarts was founded. So, I mean, we could go on that, too. But I think, it makes a lot more sense that the castle is much bigger on the inside than it is on the outside. Well, I mean, I guess technically outside, it's a moldering ruin with a sign saying, keep out unsafe. So, I mean, you know, at what point does it really exist, in a sense? But, you know, I mean, if you think about that, then to have a map that shows all of that would be incredibly... I mean, detailed isn't even the word. It would be insane. And the only way it would logically be usable is if it would totally focus itself on what you needed to see.
Exactly.
And so it just doesn't make sense. And, I mean, Rowling did answer this one, too, actually. What she said about that is that they wouldn't, Fred and George would not recognize, I mean, she wasn't referring to the actual in bed with Ron idea, which is, of course, you know, fan talk. But just the idea that why would they not have recognized that there's this Peter Pettigrew guy? Well, who is he and why is he in this? They wouldn't have recognized that name.
Wasn't important to them.
No, they had no idea who this person was. And it makes you wonder whether the names on the map of people who are not important to what you're up to, your intention, if you will, if those names just simply don't appear or if they do only if you really focus on an area or something like this.
Right.
And so...
So that leads to my question that I've always had, which really, you people announce it the same way, but I've always had a problem, especially now. I just re-listened, like, I've gotten, Sirius just flew away, so I'm at the end of the book, and I'm very, focused on that part. And when Lupin comes down into the Shrieking Shack, and they're telling their story, or what I like to call the Exposition Shack.
Mm-hmm.
And Lupin says that he thought that Harry, Ron, and Hermione might have gone to Hagrid's, and so he was paying attention to the map, trying to follow them.
Mm-hmm.
My problem isn't why didn't Fred and George notice the, Peter Pettigrew. Lupin, who does notice Peter Pettigrew and is surprised when he sees that, why doesn't he notice the other Ron and Hermione? Or, sorry, Harry and Hermione, who are, at that moment, running from the castle to the forest.
Well, put it the other way. He didn't notice them.
Right.
And so, therefore, either he just didn't notice them, or they didn't appear.
I've, I don't know. That's the part.
Well, my point
obviously
is that,
that's the explanation.
Listen,
but
we are starting to assume that the Marauder's map is infallible, and it's not. It was made by a bunch of teenagers, and it may simply have had no way to deal with the fact that people have appeared suddenly in two different places at the same time. And it may have automatically just chosen one and gone with it because it didn't know how to deal with a contradiction in reality because it wasn't programmed to do that. I mean, this is a not a perfect device. This is not an infallible device. This is a joke object, if you will, created by a bunch of kids for the fun of it. And yeah, if people literally show up in two different places at the same time, if it didn't shut down with a blue screen of death, it probably just
had some
fail-safe.
I love how the Marauder's map is now a computer.
Yeah. Well, you know. I mean, basically, yeah. It's
okay.
I'll
accept that explanation.
Okay,
that,
thank you. I'm glad. I made it up off the top of my head, so.
You know, that it just doesn't understand the second reality. And, of course, you know, if it hadn't, then, you know, earlier in the year, you know, there could have been a point that, you know, somebody would have, Harry might have noticed two Hermiones.
That's right.
Or, you know,
Yeah, good point.
Reason. But yeah. Then again, same explanation, he wouldn't be looking for Hermione because most of the time Hermione's right there next to him.
Mm-hmm. Or just coming up the stairs when she should have been behind him. But
right.
Okay, all right. We have gone on and on and on, but let's stop right there because there clearly we could go on for hours, and so we'll just take the next, you know, we'll do the next podcast in a couple of days and we'll go on for hours again.
Sounds
but
great.
For now, that is we're going to have to wrap this one up. That's it for episode number 16 of the Harry Potter Lexicon podcast. Thank you, Nick, for co-hosting this with me and sharing all your insights and everything. This is what I mean. We have so much fun talking about this stuff, you and I. And it's always fun when you've got somebody who's got, like, canon right in the tip of their brain, just like me. It's like we can just kind of throw this stuff back and forth.
Absolutely.
I know. So we will get back together again very soon. We'll record another one of these things. We've got more to talk about, more questions to answer. I want to say a special thank you to Harry and the Potters, the Wizard Rock Group, for the use of the music. The Harry Potter Lexicon is www.hp-lexicon.org, and I do welcome you to go and visit the beta version of the new version, which is beta.hp-lexicon.org, and take a look. There's a link at the top for feedback if you have any feedback you want to give. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is steve@hp-lexicon.org, and if you want to get a hold of Nick, it's nick@hp-lexicon.org. And I do really invite you to come and check out the beta version of the site. If you're listening to this a couple of weeks from now, hopefully you won't have to visit the beta. You'll just be visiting the new version. Anything else we need to talk about, Nick, or are we about done here?
You know, that we could talk, like you said, we could talk canon for hours, but
I know, I'm holding myself back.
We'll have to wait for the next one.
All right. Real good. And next one, I do want to talk about what we've been talking about, currency and coins and all this, so let's plan on talking about that next time.
Yeah, sounds great.
Very good.
There's cool stuff coming for the new lexicon about it.
There really is. Okay. Well, that wraps it up for now, and this is Steve Vander Ark and
Nick Moline
of the Harry Potter Lexicon, and thanks for listening.